Hello, everybody. Do you love bedtime stories that spark the imagination? Bed Critters is the delightful children's book that brings crazy creatures and sleepy time magic to life. Now available on Amazon. Just search Bed Critters or look for it wherever you buy books.
You can't write, yet you learn to hunt? How? Tamlin from A Court of Thorns and Roses by Sarah J. Maas. Hello, I'm Kennedy Weibel.
And I'm Rebecca Weibel.
And you're listening to Reading Pop Classics, the podcast where we discuss modern, populist, widely read books. Today, we're going to Prithian, where everything that is said or happens generates a physical response. It'll make our knees buckle. It'll make our heads swim. It'll make our fingers ache. With a heroine who hates home, wants to leave, gets to leave and go to a castle, hates that too, gets to go back home, hates that, comes back to Prithian, and surprise, is no happier there. That's right, we are discussing 2015's A Court of Thorns and Roses. Rebecca, did you enjoy this?
I did not. And I was thinking about it, and I'm pretty sure that is the first time that I've said that on this on our podcast. I don't think that there has been anything that I really did not enjoy reading, even if I liked some stuff more than others. There's certainly stuff I've gushed over. And I am okay. I'm going to say our last podcast, you came up with the portmanteau appreciate for remarkably bright creatures.
Yes.
I understand why other people like this book, but I'm not one of them. However, I will also not spend the podcast just like bashing all of it. I'm trying to find some like redeeming things. And again, I want to talk about it from the perspective of like, I understand why other people like this book. I did not like
Do
this
you?
book.
I don't.
I.
Or you know what? No, that's not true. I don't understand why. I didn't like last time. I didn't like last episode's book very much. I did not enjoy Remarkably Bright Creatures. And in some ways, this book, I think, is easier. Like in my mind, before we've gotten too deep into it, this is an easier book to talk about. Last episode was tough for me. I had almost nothing to say about Remarkably Bright Creatures. But I think this is a worse. I don't think Remarkably Bright Creatures is a bad piece. I don't think it's an offensive piece of art. This is offensive to me that this exists and that. Or not that it exists. I can see like teenagers writing something like this, of course. It's offensive to me, though, that it's like a popular book. Like, I don't appreciate it. I hate it. I like you're being diplomatic, but I think this is a bad book. I thought Remarkably Bright Creatures was like a little bit painfully simple. And I get why people might find that a relaxing read. It's To me, it was like the kind of story that someone tells you in the car on the way to Target. I don't know why it's a novel. You know, like you're just, oh, we got to go to Target. And like on the way, someone's like, you know, Tova, you know, she, you know, her son died. It turns out she's got a grandson. That's the whole thing is like between your house and a Walmart. That's the story. This is weirdly got like more things to bring up, like the fact that it's got fairy tale structure and uses some mythological structure to it and is like trying to do things, which makes it better for a podcast. But I think it's a worse book.
I
in
agree.
every
This
way.
is, yes, this is worse than Remarkably Bright Creatures, because in Remarkably Bright Creatures, the writing in Remarkably Bright Creatures is decent.
It's fine. Yeah.
It's decent.
It serves the purpose of the narrative.
We talked about the voice of Marcellus is great. That was enjoyable and redeemable and unique. We also talked about the fact that like that book wasn't written for you. That book was not written for like a 45-year-old father.
Like I said, it's a simple story that I understand why this would be an enjoyable, non-heavy read It's light, it's fun, and you read it and you feel good about things instead of feeling like a piece of crap like we all do all the time. Like you read it and you feel better.
Sure.
And
But this.
the writing style was simple and plain, and I don't mean that as a dig. That is very powerful a lot of times, but it was simple and plain, and it served the narrative very well. Simple story, well told.
Okay, so you just said we, particularly these days, we feel like crap all of the time, and then you read something like Remarkably Bright Creatures and it's uplifting and it's sweet, and then you feel good and you feel better. So something like this, and here's something that I can see that people like. This is a fantasy. I believe this actually falls into the category of romanticy, which I will
Hang
talk
on,
about more.
can you put a pin in that for our listeners? I'm going to read a quick full summary of the book and then you go and then finish your thought.
Oh, sure. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I'm going to do a summary and then we're going to talk through our various points. Okay. So, A Court of Thorns and Roses. Feyre Acheron, a human woman, 19 years old, I believe, supporting her now destitute family, kills a large wolf in the forest. A day or so later, a monstrous fae. You know what is weird? I don't know what a fae is. Is that a fairy? Is
It's
it
a
short for
fairy.
fairy? Is it just slang?
I'll look that up while you're reading, but I think it's just like short for fairy. Yeah, I think it's just another word for fairy.
That's what it sounds like and what I think it is, but like they never say, do they say fairy in this book? Or is it just
They
always
do. No,
fae?
they do. They say fae.
Anyhow.
They say fairy. They do.
A monstrous fae named Tamlin arrives at her cottage, smashes down the door, and demands retribution. The wolf was actually a fae, it turns out, that whole time. Feyre must pay with her life. But instead of executing her, Tamlin takes her to Prithian, the magical fairy realm across the wall. And he takes her there to live in his spring court, and basically he sets her up to live like royalty. He also arranges to restore her family to wealth and status, and he glamors them so that they don't remember Feyre being taken away by a monster. Feyre learns that Tamlin and his court live under a blight. The word blight gets used a lot. A curse, and it's draining their magic and forcing them to wear permanent masks. It's a very specific blight. Despite her hatred for Faye, she eventually falls in love with Tamlin. But right after this love is consummated, Feyre has to go back to her family because of Amarantha's threat. Amarantha is the woman in charge of the blight. While Feyre is home, Tamlin is forced to also leave and go to Amarantha and go stay with her. And determined to save him, Feyre follows him to a place that is called Under the Mountain. It's not super clever on the names. So Feyre follows him to Under the Mountain, where she strikes a bargain and she will face three deadly trials over 3 months. If she succeeds, Amarantha will release Tamlin and his court. And if she doesn't succeed, she will be killed. Feyre succeeds. The book is told in first person, so it was a foregone conclusion, but Feyre succeeds and is reunited with Tamlin. But you kind of get the feeling this isn't over yet. And you're right, because there's four more books after this, and we're only doing this one. Yeah, that's the summary. Okay,
I did some
go on with your thought.
research. Well, I did some research. Fae, FAE, is a shortened term for fairy, and it is a collective word for magical, mythical beings found in European folklore, such as elves, goblins, and sprites.
That's what I was looking for.
The term is
The
used to encompass a wide range of supernatural, spirit-like creatures, often with magical abilities and an alien sense of logic, who can be both benevolent and malevolent. And so then a fairy is a fairy. And so that's why it's used back and forth. And we don't. Okay, let me finish my thought.
well,
Here's what I
every
think people like about this. If we
I
read
guess so.
something like Remarkably Bright Creatures because it's sweet and uplifting and that makes us feel good, this is a silly book that takes place in a different world that has absolutely no bearing on anything going on in our world, and it's escapist. And so that is something I think that people like about it. It's a very immature love story, in my opinion. It's a very immature love story, in my opinion. But it is like kind of sexy and it has that like romance capacity to it. And for what it's worth, I don't feel great about saying this out loud on our reading podcast. I've been known to pick up a romance novel here and there
I've seen them.
because they,
I've lived with them floating around for a while.
listen, is it a thing I read all the time? It's not. Is it a thing that here and there one speaks to me and I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna be on an airplane or something, and this is a book I'm gonna be able to like knock out in a day, and it's just some fluff that I like forget about later. Yeah, here and there, I've been known to pick up a romance novel. I'm a lady. I enjoy it. They're sexy and they're fun, and you can fly through reading them. I've never read one that I thought was like high literature that I was like, man, I really gotta like pass this on to someone to discuss it with somebody, but will it entertain me for some hours? It will. And so the romance aspect was the thing about this book that was the only thing about this book that I was sort of like, well, I mean, all right, at least there's that. But I even have negative things to say about that, to be honest. However, again, I see that this is a fun, silly way of stepping out of your world, and it has no bearing on your world. I don't think you can find a lot of yourself in these stories and in these books. And sometimes I think that's what we're all looking to get away from. And I think we are certainly looking to escape from our current reality.
Yeah, I understand escapism, like a high calorie, low nutrition literature. And I'm a fan of it. I read variations on that. I don't read romance books, but there are like pulp crime thrillers, noirs that are markedly bad that like I will read for entertainment value and entertainment value only. And I understand the impulse to read those. Not even the impulse. I understand what's enjoyable about reading those. I'm surprised that this one became such a sensation.
Well,
Like
here's.
I understand why 50 Shades of Grey. I get it. It's both pornography and a highly pulpy story about like corporate intrigue and is somebody going to buy what Grey into? I don't know actually what the but like I get that. This one doesn't have a lot of like porn in it. Like the porn part of this is like low.
Yes. Okay. So I was going to say
There's a
that that.
real low porn amount in this book for like the porn part. This is a
No.
kid book, is what this is.
Yes.
Like this is a YA, this is a YA book that weirdly has a porn, or maybe not weirdly. Like I get it. Teenagers want to read sex. When I was a teenager, I wanted to see and read sex. I get that. I don't understand why adults like this. It's badly written for kids. And there's YA books that are super fun and well written. This just to me, does not appear to be one. I'm not sure what it is. I had a hard time identifying what is attractive about this. Like the main character, I find sort of a drag.
Yeah, I don't enjoy the main character. I don't think she's like she's a strong character, like she's a strong female, or we were meant to see that she is this like strong female,
I know we're reminded a lot that
because we're reminded that
she'll
we
do
are
whatever
reminded
she
that,
wants. If someone tells her to do something, she won't do it.
right? And we get the she's the one that takes care of her family and not her sisters, and like the dad can't do it, and so she's the strong female character. But she kills this wolf. She finds out that it's a human, or excuse me, it's not a human, it's a fairy. That it's a fairy. She starts to like Tamlin and Lucien a little bit, and she like it. It's she's we're like halfway through the book before she shows like an ounce of remorse for like, oh, I just like out and out murdered this fairy,
Okay,
and these
so the
people that I'm friends with care about this fairy a little bit, and she like doesn't feel bad about it at all.
I
And like
was
I
on her
get that
side
she's
about
been.
that.
I get that she's grown up being like these fairies are the worst and they
If you're
treat us
gonna,
terribly.
if you were gonna go around the woods looking like a wolf, you are going to get shot. That is on the fairy. That's on him. You're in the woods where the hunters are, dressed as a wolf, one of the biggest known predators to man, and like cattle and all the, you got that coming. I don't think she should feel bad about that. If you're out during deer season dressed like a deer and you take some buckshot, I mean, I'm sorry it happened to you, but that's on you.
But she does kind of know it's a fairy.
Well, she
She kind
wonders,
of knows that it's a fairy when she kills it, because
she
she does
wonders.
pick the ash arrow to kill it with, instead of if it's just a regular wolf, it doesn't matter what kind of arrow. It just matters if you get enough in it to take it down before it eats you.
Look, I'm gonna go ahead and say it. If even if people know that you might be dressed as a wolf out there, I'm not sure what they're supposed to do about it. Wait till you bite them and eat them like a regular wolf, and then they can go, oh, thank God. Like if you go around dressed like a wolf, you're gonna get shot like a wolf. Even if people know some idiots go around dressed up like wolves. I'm with Feyre on the wolf slaying. I just don't think that's on her.
No, I guess it's just that like she continues to be so like cold about it while she's like starting to get into really liking Tamlin. She doesn't show remorse about it for a little while. And again, I know that this is an us versus them scenario because the fairies are part of the reason that the things are so bad like for humans and stuff. But okay, but back to our original point is that we don't particularly love the heroine. I didn't particularly love the heroine. She wasn't someone I didn't feel strongly towards her. I wasn't necessarily like pulling for her.
No, because she doesn't have a personality besides obstinacy. It's not like she's got a personality and then being somewhat disagreeable or somewhat contrary is part of that personality. The entire personality is contrariness. And it's interesting because there's a little bit of that that's like what is it? In the detective novel or the noir, there is a strain of this, right? Like the main character is a guy who like can't keep his trap shut when he's talking to the big bad,
Yeah.
right? Thugs are constantly getting him and he's still mouthing off and wising off. And I enjoy that. But it's used without there's no secondary characteristics to go with it in this. I get what it's based on. It's based on that, like the wisecracking kind of the hero that we all like, right? The cool hero.
Right.
But with her, because it's not paired with anything, I don't know. It makes her an unbelievable person because she's just contrary. And it's not, I don't know, it doesn't seem based on any, it's not tied to any kind of like real humanness.
It's not. And okay, here's my largest problem with this book. Okay, and I'll preface this by saying fantasy isn't something I read.
I don't
This
really read
isn't
a lot of fantasy either. I don't like fantasy that much.
I there's I guess there are some things I've read over the years that could be considered fantasy. Some of Stephen King's stuff maybe leans more fantasy than horror. The
I'm gonna
Dark
say
Tower
the
series
Dark Tower,
has some fantasy in it.
the sci-fi fantasy, a little bit of a mashup, but it leans heavily into like fantasy tropes.
It does. And it's not like I don't never ever read it, but it's not the genre for me. I don't pick it up. I don't read a ton of fantasy. And so let me preface it by saying that my biggest problem with this book, this entire book, is tell, not show. I don't
Oh,
think
girl, yeah.
there's no world building.
No.
Like, I think that Sarah J. Maas has a very clear picture of what the fairies look like, and I think she has a clear picture of Prithian and what that looks like. It's like she made this like great sketch for herself and she's got it all in her brain and it's not on the page.
No, not even a little bit.
I don't,
All the way
there's,
down to her
there are,
main character who doesn't have any.
who doesn't really have a personality besides obstinacy. She's
And then
got some tena she's got some tenacity, but again, it's not that we It's not shown to us. We are told it. We are told, like, I taught myself to swim and I taught myself to hunt and I'm teaching myself to read. But we don't see
I
those
have to
things.
tell you, there's nothing funnier to me about this book than the fact that she can't read. And it's so funny that like in the middle of the book, Sarah J. Maas was right. Sarah J. Maas thought, I kind of overpowered this main character. She has no flaws, no foibles. She can do everything. She is completely without a Achilles heel. What could, oh, sure, she can't read. Yeah, there it is. Illiterate. And illiteracy is not funny. It's funny that Feyre in this book can't read, and that somehow becomes a plot point because one of the challenges at the end
That she has to read something.
involves reading comprehension in this book. One of them is like an SAT style chat trial, like at Amaranthus Court under the mountain, where you will be challenged with SAT level reading. And that's how she works it in.
It's like third grade level reading that she can't comprehend.
That's why the quote at the top is my favorite thing that I read in this whole book, where Tamlin, in utter seriousness, goes, "You can't write, yet you learn to hunt to survive. How?" He can't fathom that a person who couldn't write could somehow hunt. Bitch, everything that almost everything that hunts can't write. Almost
Oh my God,
everything.
that's such a good point.
Almost everything on the earth that hunts, fewer things hunt and write than just hunt. Almost everything else can't.
That is an amazing point because I'm going to tell you something about my cat, apex predator. I saw him catch a fly the other day and eat it without breaking a sweat, but I have never one single time caught him picking up one of my New Yorkers or leaving me a note.
That cat, I've never seen him crack a newspaper. I've never seen him open one of those magazines. He never leaves a note. No, you're right.
He's never written anything.
Not
He
even a
not he
lick.
frequently digs at my he digs at my papers. He loves pens. Oh man, if there's a pen sitting on something, you know what he's gonna do? He's gonna knock it right off. And he's gonna knock it right onto the floor. You know why? Because he can't write with it.
This is also a world. Both by virtue of it being a fantasy world where this just isn't really a thing that comes up very often in fantasy because it's always traveling and walking and that kind of thing. This is a world that, other than that challenge that she goes through, requires no reading. Tamlin's not like devouring novels in the other room. Lucian's not like always like with his face in a comic book. Like
They
no one in
don't do like business work. They're not like answering emails and
the No,
stuff.
no one's like sending letters back and forth. They just
They're
go.
very busy doing things that are, by the way, not described. We don't know what they're doing.
No, but there's
But
no.
there's no what things look like aren't very well described or are barely described. There's no like similes or metaphors. We're told that Tamlin takes her out to all the most beautiful places in the spring court, and like they're not described. It's just, oh my God, it was this beautiful view of a valley. And it's like, okay, I know what a valley looks like because I've seen one. I don't know. But there's no.
Yes, I.
Is it filled with purple flowers and orange trees? I don't like, what does the valley look like? Why is it beautiful?
That's what I mean by it's not fun. Like, it doesn't have a bunch of sex. It doesn't have like fun descriptions of like crazy worlds and crazy creatures. I constantly forget they're wearing the masks.
Unless and
The.
because but we're unless we're told that they're wearing the masks,
Yeah.
like
And it's
we're told
also.
that we're told, oh, you
And
know how like every
conceptually, that is interesting. I like the
100%,
idea of that. It's
I
just.
would have enjoyed that if this book, I'm just gonna say it, if this book had any world building, if this book had any world building at all, and the sex scenes are lame. They're
They
not
are.
sexy.
Yeah,
This
no, they're
is
not.
not, like I said, is this a thing I read all of the time? No, but I've read decent sex scenes and this ain't it. They're not very good sex scenes. And I do understand, okay, if this is written more towards YA, I get that, but it's not considered YA. This is not in the YA section of a bookstore.
You want to know something interesting? This, when it came out, the publishing companies were trying to launch something called New Adult, NA. Which I suppose is like just above, from what I understand, it's just above YA age-wise, right? A little older. 20s, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. So this is for college kids in young 20s who, by the way, are having like the most sex. Show me who's having more sex than a bunch of college kids and early 20 somethings.
I would also argue that you're just supposed to be an adult then, but fine, whatever. But anyhow, it was supposed to be New A, or sorry, New Adult, NA. But that label wasn't really taking off and hadn't really caught on yet. And what I
Because that
read.
generation, because, oh, excuse me, not generation, that age range wants to be adults. They think that they're adults.
Yeah, you gotta get a job and stuff.
When I was 21 and 22, I was like very much, I'm an adult now. And you're not. Your frontal lobe isn't developed and you're super not an adult probably until you're 30.
Well, you're
So
not
I
good at
know
being an
now that I'm
adult.
in my 40s, I can look at those people and be like, I consider them like new adults. That's a great way to describe them. But nobody who's in that age range wants to be called that. They just think
No.
they're adults. So I would also not respond to being called like that's if it's infantilizing, and I would not have appreciated that when I was 22, and I'd have been like, I'm not reading New Adult, I'm a real adult.
You're supposed, you mean you need to have a job and you got to pay taxes. So, I mean, you're, but yes, you're right. It is. It's infantilizing and I get why it didn't take off. I'm guessing. Yeah, so they put it out as YA and she agreed to put it out as YA instead of New Adult, NA. as long as they left in her sex scenes and they didn't make her cut it for content for the YA like categorization. And they agreed. And then I believe what I read, I believe they have now recategorized it as new adult because that has caught on a little bit more. But even if this reads like a young adult book. It's not, I would say, again, a very good one. I think there's lots better young adult books that are interesting and well written and have fun descriptions of things and good worlds. It's crazy that adults go for this, though. It's absolutely what, like, I've read Twilight, just the one. I haven't read all of Twilight. I read the book called Twilight, and I didn't like it and I didn't enjoy it. But, and it wasn't written well. Like no one at like on literature prize committees was like worried that they were going to bump Ian McEwan from like the shortlist or anything like that. But it did. Did you read it?
I've only seen the movies. I
Okay.
think, you know what? Actually, I think maybe you had Twilight laying around. I think maybe I did read the first like 5 pages or something just out of curiosity and was like, I can't do this, or I don't want to, I'm not reading this.
Everyone was
But I
reading
did.
it at work. All the ladies were reading it at work, and it was like such a cultural. It was the
No,
last
I
time
remember that
it
being
was like
why
a
you were
cultural
reading
thing
it.
that I was like, I should know what this is about. And it wasn't good, but it had better descriptions, and it was a more fun book than this, I remember. And it was also very clearly YA. Again, I don't really know why adults were enjoying it so much, but the book felt more in the lane it was trying to be in. This doesn't feel like a fun YA book or a fun adult book or a fun new adult book. It's not sexy. It's not really well written. It doesn't make a damn bit of sense.
No. Okay. Yeah. The sex scenes aren't good. Or they're not that they're not good. They're not romance novel sex scenes. Yes, they do feel. I get it. They do feel caught someplace in between YA and like an actual romance novel. But sexually, that isn't a thing. You are either a young person who is like experimenting, and this is a thing that's new to you, or you have a little more experience. Like I said, like in terms of like sex scenes, new adult isn't, that's not a thing, sexually at least, right? Is that like, I don't know, you're out there doing it. And like, high school kids, it's more challenging. Your parents are around, you're less comfortable with yourselves and your body and each other. And so the difference between IA, quote unquote, romance and like adult romance, it's different. And I recognize that. But there isn't anything in between it except for this book. And so I didn't enjoy that. I think if this had more like world building and more like descriptions of the fairies and descriptions of this like mythical land, though, I would have enjoyed it more because I would have pictured more what was going on. If I felt the writer could tell me like what she visualizes, then I would at least be like in the world and I would have enjoyed this book more.
Yeah, which makes the decision to make Feyre a painter absolutely bonkers.
Yes, because then she's like, "Oh, I'm trying to picture. I'm picturing these colors. I'm trying to imprint these colors in my brain." And it's like, "Girl, I'm trying to figure out what colors we're looking at because they're not described."
One point, she just gives up, and Feyre says, "I could never paint it." I'm like, all right, who is supposed to describe to me, the reader, what is going on then?
She's
If
like, "Oh my
the
God,
painter.
it's the most magical blue." And it's like, "Okay, well, like, what kind of blue? Is it light blue? Is it dark blue? Is it a blue that has sparkles in it? Give me some description."
And I think some of what causes that is that we have to be with Feyre and her attitude so much. And Feyre's attitude is this all sucks and I'm mad, regardless of what the actual situation is, that besides making her an unbelievable human being, right? Like just a character that doesn't like really fit into anyone that we know, except a teenager we're mad at sometimes. Because we spend so much time doing it, like Feyre's not good at, oh, she's only good at describing why she's mad. Or not even good at describing why she's mad. She's just describing being mad. He told me to sit down, but I wouldn't sit down if he was going to tell me to sit down. I stamped my foot. And it's also strange that immediately, it's petulant and childish the way she acts. She's also not worried. I think what you were like, what you know what I thought of when you brought up that like she doesn't seem upset about having killed that guy. She doesn't like seem to feel real bad about it.
Yeah.
And while I do stand by the like go around dressing like a thing that gets shot and you get shot, like I don't know if it's her fault, but I think part of it is also that she doesn't seem worried about any of what's happening to her. Like
No,
when
she's
she.
constantly going into danger. Like they tell her not to go to the, I don't know, the Spring Awakening sex night where somebody brings somebody for Tamlin to have sex with, and then all the fairies get to have sex with each other or
You
whatever.
explain it so much, and that her.
And they very clearly are like, don't, like, you're gonna get killed at this. Don't go to this. This would be an incredibly dangerous thing for you to go to.
She also, at that point, hates them. She's disgusted that she has to be there and she's angry, but she's also just like, they're gonna have a party and I won't get to go. No, they're
Yes.
not.
That's
And
it's
also,
absurd.
your
I am
reaction.
angry at her when she goes to that party of just like, why just
It's
stay
what
in
makes
your room.
her, or be someone who is like this all the time. If you got there and this was just how you behaved, instead of just constantly telling us how much you dislike them and everything that they stand for, and you never want to be around them. And then I'm going to the party. I don't know. And then wandering around, like she seems like brain damaged. Like then she's wandering around for a midnight snack. I need a little snack when she gets back. I had to go down to the kitchen for a little snack when she gets back, and then he like assaults her in the hallway.
Right. And then the next day she's indignant about it. And it's, you left your room again.
No, everyone told you in very,
everyone
very
told you
plain,
very
very
distinctly
plain
not to
language.
go to this party. Then these goblins or whatever grab you at the party and something bad is going to happen. And something bad is going to happen to you. Rhysand saves her ass. Lucian gets her back and then is like, okay, so now you understand why you're not supposed to be here. Stay in your room. And she leaves her room again. And then the next day, she has the gall, the absolute gall, to be indignant. That's like, well, Tamlin bit my neck last night. And it's like, first of all, you were real horny for him biting your neck. So stop acting like you're mad about it. And second of all, you left your room again after you left your room the first time and you almost got raped or killed by a gang of goblins. We don't know what they look like. I can't imagine how horrible they were because it's not described to me, but we're told that they're gross.
And also, it's just, it's water off a duck's back. She is not just sort of like, man, that was close. Like, my life could have taken a dramatic turn for the, I mean, for the traumatic and the horrible. I could be dead. I could be tied up, I don't know, at the top of a tree with these things gnawing on my bones. Like, anything that we can imagine because the author has chosen not to imagine it for us.
Right.
But nope, it doesn't, which is how she acts when she first gets there, where she's all just like, ah. They didn't say this to me at dinner. Are they even going to ask my name? And that's a strange reaction to having a monster break down the door of your house after you shot one of his friends, drag you to Prithian days away, tell you that you're a prisoner, more or less, that you can't leave. And she's like a girl who's come to hang out with the boys and feels like they're not giving her the proper attention. Oh, and that's just a,
Okay,
that's where it
and
started to
here's.
lose me, where I'm like, you don't seem like you're sweating this all that much. You
Okay,
don't.
and so here's my thing about her not feeling bad about the wolf. It's not that she doesn't feel bad that she kills the wolf. First of all, she kills the wolf, she skins it, she sells the pelt to the mercenary and gets money for her family. That's a big thing. She also gets to kill the deer and they get to eat the deer, so that's great because they're starving, right? Like that part, she doesn't need to feel bad about anything. Okay, but so then she gets in trouble for it. She gets dragged away from her home. She gets dragged away from, like, oh, she's made this great promise to her mother on her deathbed that, like, she'll care for the family, and now she can't do that, and she feels sad about that. She gets there and they're like, oh, okay, so it wasn't a wolf, it was a fairy, and it was our friend, and we're mad at you for it. And she still doesn't show any remorse.
Yeah, okay, that tracks. She
You
doesn't.
don't even show fake remorse in front of them, of like, well, I did think it was a wolf. I didn't realize it was a fairy. Fairies are mean to us, so maybe I don't feel that bad about it, but I am sorry that I killed your friend because now I have
Yes.
to live here with you forever.
Yes. That's also, that she doesn't do any of that. She doesn't defend
And she
herself.
holds on to feeling very like, yeah, fuck that guy. And not just, okay, for what it's worth, If I thought that I had killed an animal to save myself and or feed myself and my family, and then I found out that it was not, in fact, an animal, and that I had murdered something that's almost a human, right? Or this other sentient being. Let's take that for it. I would have some kind of feeling about it, even if I thought that that sentient being like was a jerk.
Or even if that feeling was self-preservation, yes, like we're just like, I should, oh, that's why they're upset. I should address that. Even if I don't deeply feel bad, I get it. They're mad that, yeah, okay, that's, yeah, okay. You know what? I should say something about that. I should bring it up. I should
Like
maybe start
Lucian is clearly
talking.
mad that it's like you don't even feel bad that you killed this guy that we know.
But also, Rebecca, what if then, after that all happened, you found out that they deliberately sent that guy to your woods so that you would come across him, think to yourself, maybe it could be a fairy, maybe not. Specifically, you need that thought in your mind when you kill him, so that, which he has chosen to let you do,
So that
so
Tamlin will come and get you and try to woo you.
because there's a curse that is so bureaucratically complex that it requires this unlikely scenario to unfold exactly the way it has. You get out to Prithian. You don't seem, anyhow, when you found out later, I guess, that it had all been a setup, would you, I'll tell you what I would have done is I would have gone back and been like, you guys acted like real sons of bitches when I came out here about me shooting that guy. And you did it on purpose? Like you sent him to get shot, he volunteered to get shot, and you really went out of your way to make me feel like a jerk for it.
Which is not a way to woo a woman.
No, it's not. It doesn't make sense coming or going, the whole thing.
It's like then he gets like he's mad at her, and then he gets her there, and it's like, how you doing?
No, it's the two worst people on earth eventually falling in love is the plot of this. Like they're
The
both.
plot, and then when my God, and when we get into how convoluted that plot is, I
Well,
that's.
that's right, because it's the plot of Beauty and the Beast in some ways.
It, yes,
It
this
is.
we are stepping all over, you know who you remind me of, but yes, like this is the plot of Beauty and the Beast.
Which is based, I believe, and someone out there who studies folklore and literature, feel free to write in if I'm getting this a little bit wrong. Beauty and the Beast is based somewhat on the myth or the story of Cupid and Psyche. And this seems to borrow a little bit more from that source material, Cupid and Psyche, I think, than, no, it does, I guess both of them. But at, in the course of that, Cupid disguises himself and has Psyche fall in love with him. And when she finds out who he is, they get separated and she has to descend to the underworld to get Cupid back, loosely. And usually, if someone's going to take something like that, a fairy tale or folklore or some kind of myth, they're going to tell us something new and interesting, twist it in a way that like makes it presented in a different light. And I'll use, I don't know, Labyrinth as a sort of example of someone doing that. I don't know, there, we can probably think of others. I probably should have written some down for this episode. This doesn't do that. This just, it's like she read an outline of Beauty and the Beast and was like, there we go. And I'll
Yes.
fill in no details.
Or
That's,
she just doesn't put the details in there.
which is also interesting because this book is long. Now, it probably feels longer than it actually is, but the part where she is first in Prithian, like the part from her arriving before she goes back to her now reestablished and wealthy family's house,
That's too long.
yo, it feels like that goes on forever. Ever like day after day after day
And
after
it gets
day.
boring. And one of my notes on this book is that it feels like two different books. It feels like the time in Prithian and her going home should be like, that should be the end of the first book of like, oh no, she went home, but they love each other. And then in the next book, she's like, I can't stay away. I'm going to go back to Prithian and find him. And like, then Under the Mountain starts. And then that book should be called Under the Fucking Mountain because it's like its own. Because that drags on and that takes forever, and it feels like an entirely different book. We do not need so much time in Prithian, there are plenty of things that don't like really get called back to. It's like
Sorrel. Sorrel? The Sorrel.
the Soriel that could have been shorter, like killing all the Nagas. Is did the
I thought
Nagas
the
have to
Sorrel.
come in? Because I don't know. He could have come and saved you from the Soriel and we could have ch chopped out 15 pages right there.
I thought the Soriel was going to show up at the end and it would mean so I don't know why by the time I got there, I thought that any of this was going to follow some sort of.
No, that was the thing that not enough came back from the time in Prithian to make the time we spent in Prithian worth it.
Yeah, I
Like
thought
I
the Soriel was going to play into the thing at the end because she spared its life.
Okay, because here's what happens in Beauty and the
I
Beast.
thought the Naga was going to play a part in that.
Here's
Nope.
what happens in Beauty and the Beast. Okay? There's a montage where we see they start to like each other and fall in love.
You can do it in a
There's
montage.
a montage. We have Tale as Old as Time, Song as Old as Rhyme, Beauty and the Beast. We got Mrs. Potts singing in the background. Then they have a nice dinner together and they dance and we like see that they like each other. And all that happens in like 5 minutes or however long that song is. And it's a great moment. Beauty and the Beast, wonderful. Then we get back into the action. Gaston's coming in or whatever. Yeah, like Gaston, her dad gets the villagers all roiled up. Gaston's gonna come. Then the action happens. Then he's not a beast anymore. And the movie is done. And everybody feels good. Oh, then they're dancing in the ballroom again, except Mrs. Potts isn't a teapot anymore. And she's still singing, and it's great. So half of Prithian could have been a montage. It could have been summed up. Like, I understand that it's like, I can see in her mind that it's like, but this is the love story. And this is where we see them
Well,
fall in love.
but
But
they
it's not
kind of
really.
don't. It also makes it worse, in my opinion. So I don't think it's done very. It takes too long. It's a lot of just meandering around. It doesn't add up to a lot. And I think it would be better if, because they're going to separate without her telling him that she loves him.
Yep.
Like we're the
Because
curse.
that would have broken the spell.
Would have broken the spell, it would have broken the curse, everything would have been fine. Tamlin would have had his mask fall off, the powers would have all come back to everybody.
And that is also what
Everybody.
happens in Beauty and the Beast, is then she realizes that her dad's sick. So we see that they're in love with each other. They dance in the ballroom, or that they like each other. They dance in the ballroom. He lets her come see the rose, the crystal ball, I don't know, something. She sees her dad's sick and he sends her away. Because he doesn't want her to be unhappy and
Yeah.
worried about her dad before he can like get the curse broken. So we're
And that is, and that action, him sending her away, is part of what within the plot generates the love. His action there shows that he has learned how to truly care for her, and her ability to read that action and miss him when she goes and see what it like is what the plot generates a thing you expect to happen that we need to happen. Like it makes sense because of the actions of the characters. In this, we're going to get that scene anyway, where he sends her away, and she just makes a
But she
decision to
are,
not
but
say "I love you." No,
she for just no
she does
reason, she
love him.
just
She just
doesn't
is
want
like,
to tell
"I'm
him.
not going to sit."
I'm not going to say it. I'm human. I'm going to die in like 40 years and he's not. So like, what's the point?
I'm not going to say it. I don't
Going to
feel
say
like
him.
it. He wants me to, so I'm not. But if you're the author and you're going to write that in anyhow, where you need her to go away. Without having said it, if it's necessary for your plot, why not just make that the moment when, upon leaving and being allowed to leave, she realizes that she loves him? So it makes sense that she didn't say it because she didn't know it until she left and thinks about his, the whole, like, make it part of the thing if you're going to do it anyway. And then it also makes more sense for when she comes back to save him because she's in love and it makes it. And also, we don't have to hang around Prithian for a meaningless 150 pages with the Soriel and the Naga and the like bullshit. And the book is shorter.
And the
The
book will be
shitty book would
shorter
be shorter.
because it really does feel like two books. Like when she comes back and we're under the mountain and then Am and I'm looking at this book, like there's still so much to go. And Amaranth is like, oh, you got to do these three, or you got to get through these three trials or whatever. And then it's a whole other book between her and Rhysand. You know how
When she
he
says
keeps
three
dressing
trials.
her up and make her dance in front of him every night? That
Yeah.
goes on forever.
So
That
long.
could have happened twice. That could have been like 2 nights in a row or something.
When she says the three trials, like I was listening to it in the car and I was like, all right, let's knock these three trials out. Let's get on the other side of this. And she's like, "And well, you'll have quarters where you can stay here in between when I think of them." And I was like, "Oh wait, no. Let's Amarantha, why wait? Let's do them
Why
now.
wait? Let's just do it.
Yeah, do the trials right now. Everyone's
You
here.
think she's gonna die? Get through them. One, two, three.
Yeah,
Then
yeah.
Tamlin's all yours, or whatever."
It's 3 months. She's there's 3 more months in this book. I was like, oh no.
Because you were listening to it, and I was looking at it, just being like, "This is a lot of pages
Oh,
for trials."
I checked the time and I was sort of like, there cannot be this much more left in this. She's going to pass the trials. She's the narrator in first person. We know she's going to pass them. It doesn't need to be, it goes on for so long. To say a couple of interesting things about it. The use of the fairy tales, while I don't know, it seems to be nothing but just like I like fairy tales, so I'm going to write a fanfic of a fairy tale without using the structure or the lore to do anything new with my story or to introduce any new ideas. I guess it is like an allusion at least to something. Additionally, I do like that when she gets to the trials, what is it? They're not super clean. She has to kill those three elves or whatever they are. Are they elves?
They're
Three, like,
fae. They're just, they're more fae, right?
the three completely innocent people that she just slaughters. I did appreciate that. It
That
was
was
kind
a
of
good
too little.
trial.
It was kind of too little, too late, as far as me liking this book. But the impulse to have it like that, if the book had been like, we're taking a fairy tale structure and we are going to bring in all these things that are messy and unclean about the way these are told and like try to draw attention to the grimness and like the human perseverance or whatever you decide, like something like that would have made bringing the fairy tales in mean something. By the time we get to it, it doesn't. But it was a good trial, and I did like that, especially since the last one had been the last trial had been, can you read? The answer is no. For some reason, she can't. It's also, it makes no sense that like they were from like a family of landed gentry. She could read. There's no world in which she can't read.
No,
But
not
anyhow.
really. But yeah, they give us they give us an explanation for it, but I don't think it's not great.
No, it's
And
no.
also, just as tenacious as she is, right? Like, I taught myself to swim and I taught myself to hunt. She knows some letters and stuff. I feel like this is a thing she'd have been more like insistent on, or that she could have taught herself how to do based on the character that is we are told she is. And then it's like, yeah, I worked so hard to do all of these things except read, couldn't manage to get that one under my belt. Like, yeah, I'm with you. That's annoying.
It's just such a funny thing to throw into the middle of your fantasy novel as a as the one like the way to like low status your main character. Is it like she can catch a Sauriel barely trying? She's not even worried about being captured and taken out to this castle and like maybe killed by this guy, not sweating it. She can paint really well. She helps defeat the Naga and beats a bunch of them up. Like, I should add one sort of thing to kind of. She can't be good at everything. Yeah, screw it. Reading. She can't read. It's so arbitrary.
It is. I mean, and it's so that we can have the trial, that second trial. I don't know.
Make the trials worse that one of them is based on. Like, the Amarantha was like, I don't know, make this one reading
Because
based.
the first trial is good. The first trial is like the worm's gonna eat her, and she outsmarts him and like figures stuff out. That's a good trial too. That's an action trial, so that's fun.
Yeah, and it ends the way that Predator with Arnold Schwarzenegger ends, where he finally coats himself in the mud so the Predator can't see him. Spoilers, by the way, for the 1980s Predator. And she borrows the Predator ending, which is,
Fair.
yeah, great. Also, I love Predator. Great.
Fine.
You're welcome to it.
That one was good. The third one where she has to kill the two people, and it's just like,
Yeah, that's
I'm
interesting.
saving, this is a hard, horrible thing to do. I'm saving all of these other people. Although what I was thinking at the
Yeah,
time is
they're
like,
too good for
although
this.
what I was thinking at the time is like, I don't know, man, you didn't give a shit when you found out you killed that first fairy. You didn't care about, like, halfway through the book, she's finally like, you know what? I bet that did hurt their feelings. I bet they were sad about that. If somebody had killed like my sisters or my dad, I'd feel pretty badly that that was the thing that happened. Like she finally gets some conscience about it. But yeah, so like with these people, she's just like, oh no, now I feel bad about killing these berries. But I did like that. The Heart of Stone thing.
It's too good for this book. Like it doesn't, it feels out of place that this sort of, and it doesn't spend a lot of time addressing it, but it is, it's too heightened for the rest of what I've read. Where, can we talk a little bit about the language? Every time something happens, she's just sort of like, I felt my breath do a somersault in my heart, and then my elbows locked.
Did you write this book? 'Cause that was great.
He growled at me and I felt my eyebrows flutter and then my eardrums popped. Like there's so much of it. There's so
There is
much
a
of
lot of
that.
it, yeah.
And there is so much gender language. Like for no, he
What do you
came
mean?
in. Tamlin, a male, entered the room. And then Miss Teapot, a female, entered the room after. I'm like, yeah, no, that's fine. I mean, we're, you don't have to keep saying it every couple of Lucian, a boy. No, I, yeah, okay, no, I get it. Me, a woman. Like, nope, yep, I know. We're on
There's
page,
also a ton of
100 of this.
ellipses, like when she's trying to make like Tamlin's like awkward in the beginning, like talking to her, and it's just like all ellipses. Like he says something, dot dot dot, and then he finishes his dot 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 sentence. And
So I
it goes
listened
on
to.
for a really long time. And it there's again, this is just going back to not being able to describe things. There are other ways
So
to
I was
show that
reading.
he's being awkward than for all of his sentences to have halts in them every so often. It's annoying. Like, just show me in other ways that he's awkward and he feels awkward and that he's trying to woo this girl and that
I
he's
was
doing it and
reading.
that he's doing it badly. My God, Sarah J. Maas, you wrote this for new adults. I hope you went into any bar that is filled with 20-somethings and watch them interact with each other. And you would not need to use ellipses. You could find a way to describe what awkward romantic interactions look like. Go to college. Go to a college bar.
I was reading like fan forums, like subreddits that are dedicated to this to see what people really liked about it and like how they talked about it. And there's just berserkers who come rampaging into there and just drop a long post about what a piece of shit this is. Every now and again, you're reading all this love, and then there's someone who's like, the fuck is wrong with you people? The ellipses come up a lot. That was how I found out that they were doing that. People were like, what is with all the ellipses? Like, why aren't any of those sentences just two sentences? Like what? It's there's so much of it, and then I started looking at. I went online and looked at like pages from inside the book, and I was like, "Oh man, there are a lot. It's not an exaggeration. Like it's a ton of them. Like the book's written like just a ton of dot dot dot. Like every third sentence. I don't.
What does it sound like when you
It's
sound
odd.
like on audiobook? Do they do the pauses? Did you notice in like the audio that it was like, why is this awkward dialogue so awkward? What does it sound like?
What it sounds like on my audio is like the chipmunks reading it because after the first hour, I was like, this has to go faster. And I put it up to like 2.3 because it's, I was like, this isn't going to work for me. No, the reader, the whoever reads it just reads it through. There's, she does inflection and stuff, but she
She's
doesn't
not
just
like
pause.
pausing.
No.
Because she was probably like, God, this is dumb.
It is dumb. It's a dumb book, and it's. I don't. Usually, I can guess when we do these what it is that really appealed to everybody. And this one stumps me a little bit. I think you have touched on something, is it's escapist. And we've talked about how marketing plays a part in this, right? If you choose to really hammer a book on Book Talk, like if you're a publisher and like to really hammer it on Book Talk and take out ads and make sure it's in the front of Barnes and Noble and make sure there's a big print run, you're going to gain more attention than is than what it would perhaps gain on its own. That's true of kind of anything. But I don't know, man. There's so much like romanticism out there. Like, why this? The cover is rad.
It is a good cover.
Yeah, did I tell you how I first got this book?
No.
I didn't know anything about it at all. And my wife gave me some Audible credits that she had, which is great, good wife. 10 out of 10, if you can get one that does that, recommend it. But she gave me some Audible credits, and I'd seen this like floating around just like in bookstores and stuff. And I didn't look up a thing. I should have. I judged a book by its cover, but I was like, the cover, like the title sounds like, I don't know, like Guns N' Roses, like a Guns N' Roses B-side or something like that from the 90s.
Yeah, I'll take that.
Like a Motley Crue ballad. I was looking at the bright red cover. I was like, this is probably like really good. And I listened to the, I don't know, 4 or 5 minutes of it. I listened from The Killing of the Wolf to The House to going into town to sell the wolf pelt where they meet the children of the sun, who, by the way, also don't come back and do not matter. Or the children of the fit, whatever the like the pale,
Yeah,
whatever.
the children of the corn, the children of the fairies, the children
Yeah,
of
whatever
something.
it is.
Yeah, something.
And I was like, this isn't going to work for me. But the cover got me, where I was just sort of like, this must be kind of cool. And maybe it was that. I don't know. Why would like grown-ups? I know people who I think are smart people who love this series. And they kind of defend it as being fun. I don't know. I would push back. It doesn't seem all that fun. And not just because I like don't, I don't think
I
I'm.
mean, okay, I have this to say because we've just already discussed it's like we've already discussed its similarities or we've compared it a little bit with 50 Shades of Grey. Let me tell you something about 50 Shades of Grey. Until I read A Court of Thorns and Roses, that is 100% the worst shit I have ever read. The
You read all
writing,
three of those.
I did. Yes, no, I have more to say. I'm going to admit that.
Right. Sorry, carry on.
I have more to say. The writing is repetitive and bad. The story is bad and silly.
Ludicrous. I remember going to
I.
when you had it a fly, lying around the yoga studio back in the day. It was insane.
Okay, the worst shit I have ever read. The worst writing I have ever read. The stories aren't good. And that is why I enjoyed it. It's so bad that it's fun. It's a Hallmark movie. It's the Netflix Christmas movies. They're not good. They're so bad. The dialogue is so bad. The acting is so bad that it's enjoyable and you can't look away. Remember that movie Sharknado?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Is that a good movie?
No, it's in no way good.
Would you go see it? Would you sit down and watch it for free? Yeah.
Actually, for free, yeah, for free, I would, yes, you're right. I would not go see it. If it was on TV, I would watch more than I should for free.
I went and saw Cocaine Bear in the theaters. That
Okay.
was the movie.
Now I'm going to defend that. I think that was a rollicking good time. And
Yes,
I'm
me
not sure what
too.
the critic's problem with that was exactly what I signed up for when I went to see Cocaine Bear.
Cocaine Bear was the movie that got me to go back into movie theaters after COVID. I remember seeing the preview for it and being like, you know what? I will go sit in a movie theater and see this. And I enjoyed the shit out of it. You know what? That was a bad example because I actually think that was pretty legitimately a movie. It is about a
Margo
bear that does a
Martin,
bunch of cocaine.
Margo Martindale's in that.
But to your point, it is exactly what you think it's going to be. All right, so I'm taking that one out of the running.
Okay,
Okay,
no,
but like,
I'm glad you
okay,
brought it
but
up though,
Sharknado.
because that is what I think the difference is. That had, in my opinion, that was something that was made to be an entertainment, and it had a charm to it and an energy to it, and they tried to put a little bit of quality into it to make it something that was fun to see. And this feels like someone found this in
Well, no,
their
okay,
mind.
I'm not done.
Oh, sorry, carry
I'm
on.
not done. Okay, Cocaine Bear was a bad example because I really enjoyed Cocaine Bear. Okay, but something like Sharknado, something like the Hallmark movies or like the Netflix Christmas movies that are like the play on the Hallmark Christmas romantic comedies, they're so bad they're good and it's enjoyable to watch them, okay?
Yeah, I
And
agree.
like in 50 Shades of Grey was one of those, first of all, and second of all, it has so much sex in it. I remember my friend coming into the yoga studio. We were both reading them at the same time. And we came in and she was like, "Man, I have a urinary tract infection just from reading this book because they have so much sex in it." And I have remembered that for 15 years because I thought it was so funny.
That's a good line. Who said that? You don't have to say their name on the podcast. That's funny though.
Gina.
That's funny.
Yeah, I thought so too. I laughed so hard. I remembered it for 15 years. I remember her walking in And I was like, "Are you reading it? What do you think?" And she said, "I have a urinary tract infection just from reading this book." And I thought it was hilarious, and we both got a good laugh out of it.
Right, but that's
But
pornography.
this, exactly, and it's pornography. This I didn't enjoy.
No, it's just the plot of pornography without the pornography.
Without the pornography, I
Whether it's
don't.
on film or a book, known to be not the reason we're there.
Okay, in Hallmark Christmas movies, there's a visual, right? So it has these like very good-looking people in it, and they're funny. They usually have little jokes and stuff in them. Sometimes the jokes aren't bad, but that's funny, the way dad jokes are funny. One of my patients' husbands, every time we come in, has a dad joke for us that's like a not funny joke, but it's funny. And he like delivers it funny, and like he doesn't know, he knows that they're like dumb, silly jokes, and it's just a way to entertain us and occupy us, and it's enjoyable, okay? And like in like those holiday movies and stuff, like they have that. They have these little like callback and things that are funny. This book isn't funny. It doesn't have sex. It's super badly written. It does not have enough sex, and it's not well written. The story is convoluted. So here's something with both the 50 Shades of Grey and if we're talking about like Hallmark or Netflix, like those types of movies, it's a simple story.
Yeah.
This isn't. This is convoluted.
Why? She doesn't question. She gets out there. They set her up in the place. She has the run of it. She can go wherever she wants. They give her some guidelines where they're like, you probably shouldn't wander around without us. It's a little dangerous, but you're not allowed to wander around except that one night. By the way, I've reestablished your family as wealthy again. I've given them back everything. I've glamored them so they don't remember me coming in. So your promise to your mother about always taking care of them, as long as you stay here, done. You're off the hook. And then we get like this information dump way later in the book about this very complicated curse, which is why all that had happened. And you know, foreshadowing exists for a reason, where you're supposed to drop hints that something might be building to this to give the reader an idea of why none of this makes sense. That way, the reader is along with you because that's who it's written for, is for someone to read it. This doesn't do that. It just doesn't make sense until a two-page dump of exposition gives us this really lame curse.
Yeah, that okay. So that's the thing too, is that you're right. Like generally when you're reading something like this, you are it's like you're trying to put it together a little bit. And I didn't feel like I was trying to do that because I didn't feel like there were any hints.
No, that's what foreshadowing is for. It's so that you, it's so
I
that
didn't
you.
feel like I was trying to put anything together. I was just waiting for somebody to tell me why I was reading this book.
Yeah, like you're
And then
supposed
when they
to.
did tell me why I was reading it, we had an entire other, then it was like a whole second book. And Under the Mountain.
Yeah, it just kept going on.
I will tell you, okay, because I had not intended on just trashing this book for the whole podcast because I don't
I
like
did. I intended to just trash it for the whole podcast.
I mean okay, much like how Sarah J. Maas has a whole thing in her mind that she can't put words to, I did have this intention of like I'm gonna find some nice things to say about it, but I didn't have nice things to say about it.
I
Okay, but
did not find.
here is something that I did enjoy, and that is the Rhys and Feyre storyline in Under the Mountain, like that she's so Lucien comes in and helps her out after the after all the when she first gets there and they first establish they are going to go through she's going to go through the trials or whatever, and then all those goblins just like kick the shit out of her. I'm sorry, that's not funny. I shouldn't be laughing about that. I don't know why I think that's funny. Yeah, so then all those goblins just like beat her up for no good reason, just to make her weaker and make it worse because fairies are mean, and this is why she killed the fairy in the first place at the beginning of this book.
It is the
But
second part is
Lucien
more
comes
interesting than the
in.
front.
Lucien. Yes. So Lucien comes in and helps her out. Then after the sandworm from Beetlejuice is like trying to eat her in the first trials, she's hurt and she's got gangrene basically, right? Or like blood poisoning in her wound. She's dying. And Rhysand comes in and bargains with her. And like she knows she shouldn't do it, but she's gonna die, and then all these fairies are gonna have masks on their faces forever and be stuck under the mountain or whatever. I found that dynamic interesting. That's a sexy, interesting dynamic. She sells her soul to the devil sort of thing. I found that to be interesting. You're right. Once we got to Under the Mountain, it was like, oh, this has gotten more interesting because nothing's happened in Prithian and I was really bored. So this has gotten more interesting. But even then, that just drags on too long.
It does, and it suffers from the first part because we've sat through so much already, and we know that it has to work out, or we know that she has to live anyway because she's telling us the story.
And because there's four more books.
Yes, and you and I know there's four more books.
That's true. I guess when the people were reading this when it first came out, they didn't know that.
The second half is stronger because it does pull some of the fairy tale elements into a new light, I think, or at least has something to like say about them, or plot wise anyhow. It brings some of those elements forward and gives them some kind of, it puts some meat on the bones of this like really dull story up until this point. Like, I think that's maybe the greatest crime I feel is that so much of this is just tedious.
It is tedious, correct.
Like, you've borrowed something that like just is, you've borrowed a structure from fairy tales and folklore that is interesting without having to do a lot of work. Like, you get fun worlds and things like that. You need to populate them and describe them and build them and lean into it. And the first several hundreds of pages are just spinning our wheels where we're meeting the Soriel and the Naga, and like she's just hanging out in Prithian. And then it picks up a little bit of the Under the Mountain. That also goes on too long. And you're right, it should be two books. But I
Like when
guess the
she,
first,
like,
the
yeah,
first book,
like,
you wouldn't read the second one if the first one was just the Prithian part, right? The series wouldn't have made it.
the series wouldn't have made it. It goes on too long. But this is, okay, this is why we have editors. Why didn't an editor come in and be like, listen, I'm gonna need you to movie montage some of Prithian, and I'm gonna need you to movie montage some of the stuff with her. Like the thing with her and Rhysand just goes on for a really. It just goes on for a really long time. He keeps like getting her drunk and making her dance every night. That goes on for pages and pages and pages. And then we find out that he's, oh, I'm trying to make Tamlin mad. And it's like, okay, so Tamlin was mad the first night you did that. We didn't need 15 more pages of this. These things just could have, a lot of this just could have been wrapped up better. But I feel like it's because a lot of the story feels really convoluted.
Well, and also, if you hadn't so firmly made her, if you hadn't established that she is already in love with Tamlin in the earlier part and had made it something based on that happens after he sends her away and she comes to this conclusion, and then she's out there going through all this, and you introduce this Rhysand dynamic, this love triangle, whatever it is, you give more weight to her still choosing Tamlin in the end. Like, we could believe that maybe she's going to falter in her love for Tamlin, that maybe she's going to change her mind, that maybe she's going to see things differently based on what's happened to her.
But then that isn't really a thing
But
either.
she's so Tamlin-pilled there that we know that that's not going to happen. My lord, my high lord is, how could she do this to my high lord? There's never any doubt. And the doubt would make it interesting. It would introduce a tension.
Yes, and it would have made the fact that that part went on for so long more worthwhile.
Yeah, it
It
would
would
have
have made it
definitely.
more, it would have made it, it would have made sense that it went on for so long. It would have given it a reason to give on so long. But it does feel like this, like the storyline, it gets convoluted with some of the, like, and he said, and she said, and then we have the, there's the other fairy realm. Hang on, let me look at my map. There's Highburn or whatever. And so it's like, I don't know, someone over there is mad at Amarantha, and we have to have a whole thing where she finds that out. And it's just, and then that doesn't, it's just convoluted. There's too much. And okay, so I will say something that occurred to me, a thought that I had is that, okay. This does not detract from the fact that writing wise, this is tell, 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 and I've not seen anything. I've not been shown anything. However, I did have the thought, because I said there's not really a lot of world building. Like, I feel like we are just plunked down into the middle of a story where it's, I hate fairies, and if this wolf's a fairy, I don't really give a shit whether or not I kill it. If it's a wolf, it'll work out for me. And if it's a fairy, like, fuck the fairies. And then we're just in this story. But it did occur to me that the entire first book is just maybe world building and setting up for the rest of the story.
Yeah.
Does not make up for the writing.
No, and I think you hit on something with the like two book thing. The I don't know why someone didn't tell her to like really whittle down the Prithian part.
And to speed up the Under the Mountain.
Yeah, speed that up. But like also just we don't need to be in Prithian that long. The second part will be stronger if you the second part will be much stronger if we don't spend so much time in Prithian establishing all of these things that we're just establishing all these facts that we no longer need to discover in the second half. Like we're just waiting to go through the three trials.
Yeah. And they're far apart and they take a long time.
I suppose lastly, I have a question for you about the riddle. So the riddle got me partially because I just was like, there's no way the answer is just love. That would be stupid. It would be stupid if the answer was love. She wouldn't have done that. It has to be something a little more clever than that. But no, it's friggin' I knew the minute the riddle was introduced that the riddle was going to be in game. But she got me on the fact that like I just gave her more credit than maybe she
Well, you
deserved.
shouldn't have because you read this book. By the time we
I
get to the riddle, you should. I don't. Why would you have given her any credit? I blame you for that. Here's what I wrote about it. That's the Harry Potter answer.
The Harry Potter answer is that it's just love.
That's why Voldemort doesn't kill Harry Potter as a baby.
Oh, that's,
Because
yeah.
his mother's protecting him. So I guess I read. Is Harry Potter, would you consider that as a fantasy?
Yeah, that's fantasy.
Okay, so for our readers out there, that's the kind of fantasy I read. If it's Harry Potter or Stephen King wrote it, then I read fantasy. But I don't seek it. It's not a thing I seek out, really.
I saw a funny thing on the
Unless
internet.
maybe it has, or into your point, I suppose, when it maybe sometimes when things have like more of a sci-fi element and some fantasy, like there are things. But even that's just like things that are popular and happen to be those genres. But
I
anyways,
saw.
but yes, that's the answer is that his mother and father protect him. They die to protect him. They die in pr to protect him because they love him. His mother jumps in front of him to protect him from Voldemort, and he kills her. And then when he blasts Harry Potter, it makes it like a mirror, beams it off his forehead. He gets the little lightning scar, and it comes back, and it's Voldemort's initial demise.
I saw a funny thing though that was like, you know, Voldemort's weak. Like, he can't do anything without magic because he like tried to magic that baby and it's not that hard to kill a baby. Throw it out the window. They're super fragile. You don't need to use magic to do this. It's a baby.
Yeah, that's a good point. You
You
could have
just,
just.
you've got no game plan if you're just sort of like, I gotta use magic for literally everything. You just step on it real hard. Problem solved.
God, that, yeah, that, much like your very astute observation that the majority of the things in this world that hunt can also not read or write. Yeah, why did you have to magic it? Baby, you're right. Baby, you know what terrifies me about babies?
You could have fed it a carrot and it might have choked. There's like they're
Do you
all.
know what terrifies me about babies? And people are like, "Do you want to hold my baby?" And I'm like, "What if I kill it?" No, it seems terrifying to me. They're so fragile. It's why I'm not a pediatric occupational therapist. If I worked in early intervention, I'd be having to hold people's babies and like, you have to swing them around and test their reflexes and stuff. And that feels like a thing that scares me.
Then, so I will also, if we're saying positive things, the dynamic with Nessa, her sister.
That was her Nesta's story arc as a pleasant surprise. Yeah, that was the second nice thing I was gonna say too. Tell me your thoughts.
No, I think that's an actual interesting dynamic that changes, and that it doesn't, Nessa doesn't turn out to be nice or something like that. Nessa is still Nessa and is still just, I don't know, just a hard-line knucklehead.
Looking for her sister. She tries
Yeah.
to go to the forbidden, scary fairyland. She tries to go across the wall or whatever to look for her
Oh.
sister because she's not so easily duped by the glamour.
And she, it's in character. It's a good plot development that that's the direction that it goes. And again, it would have been stronger if we'd gotten to it sooner.
I have something mean to say again. Back to that. So, you know, when she first gets to Prithian and all the fairies are like good looking? Like they all
Yeah.
have the masks on, but it's like, oh, they're all like beautiful and sparkly. And then he like stops glamoring them, and she's like looking around, and like Aelys is in her room, and it turns out she's made of like tree bark or something, and she's like horrible looking. And then she's like, okay, so that's just like another example of tell, not show, that it's like, oh, so I got to Prithian and everybody was good looking. And then one morning I woke up and they were all like just horribly ugly and weird looking. But then that's not described. This one looks like she's made out of tree bark. And then that's it. That's it. There's no other descriptions. There's not even, does she look like a tree? Is she a tree person? It just
Yeah,
says that
is
like
it a
her
skin
skin is made
apartment?
out of bark. Like, does she look like a tree? Is she tree shaped? Is she look like a person who's made out of bark, or her wings made out of bark? Does she have wings? But then nothing's actually described. It's just like, yeah, no. And then like she comes downstairs, and Tamlin's basically like, yeah, no. The only people here that are attractive are me and Lucy, and everything else is really ugly. And I didn't want to scare you. And then she's just like, oh, okay, everything here is ugly. And then we all know that everything in Prithian is like ugly and weird looking and not the beautiful fairies that we all thought they were going to be, except for the high fae that are described to us as attractive, that we are told is attractive.
All right, do we want to go into, did this pass the Bechdel test?
So it does pass the Bechdel test, not greatly, but it does pass the Bechdel test. Like she talks to the merc so she talks to the mercenary, and they're not talking about dudes, they're talking about fairies and how to kill them.
No, and her sisters, and Nesta has like a real, Nesta is a real character. Like maybe the only person in this book who has any kind of actual character development or a plot that does them any kind of justice.
Yeah, and she's talking to her sisters in the beginning about how to stay alive when she's going to get taken away and stuff. So it does pass the Bechdel test.
Did you cast it?
I did cast it. Okay, so given the popularity of this book, so kind of like Remarkably Bright Creatures, I went big blockbuster because that's if this is made into a movie, it's going big block, like big blockbuster. I will remind you that the age of some of my characters, this is Stephen Hawking's casting call. I assume that these are all going to be like young. If this is made into a movie, it's all going to be like young, good-looking people. So just imagine that these people are the ages that they need to be, because this is Stephen Hawking's casting call. Okay, so for Farah, I cast Olivia Cooke. She was in Ready Player One, and she was in House of the Dragon.
Let me get a look at it real
So
quick.
she's got the fan like she's got the fantasy role under her belt.
Oh yeah. Yeah, she'd be good.
I had let me look say. Let me take a look at her again. Look at her face. I picked her. But yeah, so she's got the fantasy stuff under her belt. She was in Ready Player One, so she's played these like strong female characters. And she, I'm okay. This is no knock on Olivia Cooke. I feel like she's an attractive girl, but she's not like movie star mega glamorous. She's not like Margot Robbie hot, right? Like she looks like somebody that you would know that you considered an attractive girl.
And that's part of what the way main characters in books like this is how they're described, particularly in YA.
Yes, exactly. Is that it, because you were meant to be able to feel like you could be this person and have a really hot guy love you. So, Tamlin, Chris Hemsworth.
That's a good one.
And he was in Thor, so we know he's got fantasy under his belt. He is just like stupid good looking. And do you know who could do? Listen, if I'm going to be attracted to a beast, I feel like Chris Hemsworth can pull that off. I just feel like he's got it in him.
I like Hemsworth. In my head, I pictured Henry Cavill.
So you'll be pleased to hear that Henry Cavill's also appearing in my movie as Rhysand.
Okay, that is also good
Because
casting.
Rhysand is dark. He's Night Court, right? He's Night Court. Yeah, he's Night Court. He's dark.
I think I would also enjoy Henry Cavill as much as I love Henry Cavill as The Witcher and in that Mission Impossible movie where he like reloads his arms during the fight scene. It would be fun to see him not play the heavy. Like he's always like Superman or he's the Witcher or he's someone who's
Oh, I
just
see what you're saying. Right. No, and in this
under
he's
thunderously kicking ass throughout like whatever he's in.
and in this he's ma he's magical and he's a little oily. And
He's
it but charming.
yeah, he's yes, he's like a
He's
charming
not really
schemer.
Rhysand is not really a bad guy.
No, he's a schemer. And he's a little, I think that'd be fun for Cavill to play something a little bit against type and to play the guy who's got like machinations going on in the background and has got a little bit of a plot of his own that is working alongside the narrative. Who's Lucian?
Cameron Monaghan, he's in Shameless. He's the gay brother in Shameless. He's redheaded because Lucien's a ginger. And I can see him being like sharp and cunning. And cutting is what the word I meant to use, like sharp and cutting. Because Lucien's kind of snippy and snappy with her. He's not like super friendly with her in the beginning, but he's not a bad guy. And just because Shameless is sprawling, Cameron Monaghan's got range.
I like it.
Because Lucien obviously likes her, he helps her out. Like they do have a closer relationship, like towards the end. And the last person I cast was Amarantha, and I did Julianne Moore.
Oh, I like that. I like Julianne more than anything.
Julianne Moore nails everything that she does, and I like when she's like bad or mean.
Yeah. I think this movie would work if you leaned into making it funny Or maybe not funny, but making it a little. Did you ever see Starship Troopers? It's based on a book that is very sincere and serious and is not meant to be satire. But in the movie, the director has just leaned like heavily into the satirical elements that kind of naturally put themselves forward by a story like this taking itself seriously. And I think this would work. I think I would enjoy this if it was handled in that same way.
I could see that because I
Probably
really.
wouldn't appreciate that, but I would.
Right. I could see that because I didn't particularly enjoy Thor, but then they leaned into making it like funnier. And then
Yeah.
they brought, and then the Guardians of the Galaxy and Thor crisscross in like a few movies. I think some of them are Thor movies and some of them are Guardians of the Galaxy movies. It's been a while since I've gone through the whole series, but yeah, like the way that eventually, because a lot of people don't like Thor. It's part of the
The
original
original.
one. Yeah, the original Chris Hemsworth one is because it was draggy fantasy for me. Okay, this is for me.
No,
If you were someone who loved Thor, for
it
me, it
suffers
was
from what
draggy
Thor
fantasy.
suffers from. It's like overly sincere fantasy in a world that is just so hard to take seriously.
Yes, and I didn't enjoy it. And when I went back to start what to start with Iron Man and go all the way through in preparation for
Endgame.
Endgame, thank you. I just remember being like, God, can I skip Thor? Can we just skip all of the Thors? And I think I did skip the first one because I was just like, I've seen it. I get it. Please don't make me. I'll read a synopsis like online. But then I was convinced that, okay, but the other ones are better. Let's watch the other ones. And I did watch the other ones and was like, oh, okay, like you've leaned into making this funny and Chris Hemsworth does that well. So this is more enjoyable for me. And then they started crisscrossing with Guardians of the Galaxy, which that those in Iron Man. The Iron Mans are hands down my favorite part of those. Was my favorite part of that arc.
Downey Jr. immediately in the first Iron Man adds levity to an absurd movie that if you play it too straight like this does, it just stops being, it's, I don't know, in my opinion, unenjoyable that something this absurd takes itself this seriously,
Right.
which this does.
It does. It takes itself too seriously.
Who'd you
But yeah.
have for, you know, who you look like?
A handful of things. We've discussed some of them. 50 Shades and Twilight.
I have both of those are mine.
Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah.
And then Hunger Games.
Yeah,
I
that's
guess partly because I mean, she starts out with a bow and arrow. And Katniss is a strong female character. Katniss is a much more likable character, though.
she's way more likable, and Hunger Games is a better written book that is also just handled far better all the way through the series. I haven't read beyond the original three, but the original trilogy is good all the way to the end, in my opinion.
Well, I have the other two. If you'd like to read them, I enjoyed them.
I'm good with that. That's the three. That story is over for me.
Oh, no, you should read the other two.
Nah, I'm good. I got everything I need from that series and the first three novels. I'm fine.
They're prequels. You don't need them.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't have a
That
single
was,
one.
oh, did you have something else for You Know Who You Look Like?
No, I had Twilight and 50.
Those are Twilight 50 and oh yeah okay I did I had two th I did have something to say about the ending. I'm sorry to step back in. Okay, so the riddle and the answer in the end is love, just like Harry Potter. So I was like, oh, Harry Potter ending. But what we didn't talk about, and I did want to just briefly touch on, speaking of, because I guess like in terms of You Know Who You Look Like, we could talk about Harry Potter a little bit because this is also the same ending that both Jesus Christ and Harry Potter have.
Yeah, when you come to a point like this,
The hero dies and returns.
yes, which is a very common plot machination for what do you do with someone who is this overpowered and you have to have something happen to them, kill them, and they come back.
Yeah. And we're clearly all borrowing that from the Bible.
Yes, which is also borrowing it from a ton of myths, right? As a common,
That's true.
like
That does come from a bunch
humans have been telling
of
that
a bunch of
story for.
myths. Because I was just sitting here thinking, because I know less about other religious tomes than the
Probably
Bible because
not
I'm an
so
American. But yes, I think that I was just sitting here thinking if you are some non-Christian based religion and you'd like to share if your religion has some similar story, I would love to hear about it. I actually really enjoy learning about other religions,
she gets to be rich.
texts and stuff.
She gets to be a fairy. Feyre becomes Fey.
She becomes a fae.
which I think we all probably knew was going to happen when we realized her name was Feyre and that she was going to stay with the Fae. I don't have a single quote besides the one I read at the top, which I picked out of meanness because it was so stupid.
I have one that I found. This is at the end. I placed my hands on his chest, feeling the heart beating beneath. I thought his heart was made of stone. And that's the note that I made. I pulled that out because I had this moment of like, what do I have on page? Why do I have page 411 marked? I didn't think I had any quotes. And then I looked. It was like, oh, right. I thought his heart was made of stone. Why is it beating? And around in there?
Is it supposed to be literally made of stone?
She smashes a dagger into it, and this dagger bends.
Oh, that's right. That's right. It is
Yeah, that's why
literal
she can't
stone.
kill him. And then he heals quickly because he's a fairy. So
I'm sorry, I forgot that that was actually like the reason she knows she can stab him directly in the
that's why
heart. It is
she
made of
figures out that
stone.
she can stab him. Okay, I am going to end by saying one nice thing.
Okay.
I appreciate that the fairies are like cunning little tricksters. I appreciate that that's a thing that like comes up throughout the book, that it's like you can't really trust them and you shouldn't make bargains with them, and then they do all turn out to be like clever and trickstery, and that was a thing about the fairies that I enjoyed. And I will say we do actually like see that a few times
Yeah, they're all con men.
in the book, that they're all like connish men and women, and I think that's true to like these kinds of like myths and stories.
So, would you recommend this?
No, I wouldn't.
No, I also would not read literally anything else. And if
I
you're.
won't apologize to anyone who I this is the I'm this is the most we've ever trashed a book on this podcast. Do you think that's true? I don't think we've ever hated something so much.
This is the first book that we've read for this that I don't find redeemable in any way.
Yeah. So listen, if you were somebody who liked this book, I don't want to take your escapism away from you, because I have admitted on this podcast that I enjoyed the 50 Shades series. I sometimes read romance, and that I enjoy the Netflix holiday rom-coms that are like really bad, and that I loved Cocaine Bear, although I stand by Cocaine Bear. And so what I would recommend is for everybody to go watch Cocaine Bear, because it's a lot of fun. However,
Opportunity to recommend Cocaine Bear.
yeah, let's take this opportunity to recommend Cocaine Bear. But yes, if somebody asks me like what I thought about this book, I expected that I was not going to enjoy this book. But I was hoping to not feel like I wanted to just trash it for an hour and a half on this podcast. So again, if you enjoyed these books, I'm sorry for that.
I'm
And
not.
I don't want to take away your like escapism and your fantasy. Maybe it would be enjoyable if you enjoyed these books to drop us an email at readingpopclassics@gmail.com, or you could Instagram at us at readingpopclassics. And just to and tell it, why do you like this? What do you like about it? And share that with us, because like I said, I've just sat here and told you why I liked 50 Shades of Grey, and those are not particularly redeemable books. They're not good, but I enjoyed them. And if you enjoy this and it makes you feel good and you'd like to share that with us, I would be truly interested to just like to know that and to figure that out, and then tell you just like, happy reading. But yes, the full answer to this question is that I personally would not recommend this to somebody and tell them to read it.
If you feel that we missed something or there's some piece of this that we're not getting that is elevates it or saves it or redeems it in some way, let us know. We'll discuss it seriously, but good luck.
Okay.
All right, what are we
So
doing next?
we are veering okay, so we have we're veering back into something more literary or
Also
that are
still fantasy.
popular. We are staying with fantasy in our next book, but yes, this upcoming book and our next few books are we are veering a little bit back into what would be more considered like literary fiction as opposed to popular fiction. So we are kicking off our lit fic run with Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell by Susanna Clarke.
Which is going to be, I think, a four-parter, did we say?
Yes, so this is a really massive book, and in lieu of giving you a 6-hour long podcast or taking an entire day out of our lives to talk about it, we will, yes, be breaking it into a series. We are currently planning for it to be a 4-part series.
Yeah, it's about 1,000 pages, and I think I want to try and hit around 250 pages per episode, and we will put in on the Instagram and everywhere else that we put out messages, we'll let you know like what chapters that's going to be. All right. So that's it. As we mentioned, write to us, tell us what you think, and we look forward to seeing you. Well, no, we won't ever see you, but we look forward to you joining us for Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell.
And thanks for listening.
I'm not. 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 I'm